number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg a dollar. Smack a jackal.
Next time is the right time.
You know the
it's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now.
This is what we do.
From the Quicken Loans studios, here's Tony D.
Sir, the Dallas Cowboys, is the light still on at 3-7 now that Tony Romo's back and they went out and beat the Miami Dolphins? And oh, by the way, can we now make the assessment that Dan Campbell, that shine is gone on the Miami Dolphins? You know, I made this joke on Saturday. I think it was to you, Adam, about South Carolina's Sean Elliott.
Yes.
Like, you're not getting the job. Don't even fight for it. Can we say the same thing about Dan Campbell? Like, Stephen Ross is not going to hire Dan Campbell to be the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, right? We're all in agreement.
Right. Like, it's Stephen Ross. He's going to go after something big. That's what he loves to do.
Yeah, the bloom is off the rose on Dan Campbell. It was cute in the beginning when they looked like they were playing hard and looked like they were playing together. Now it seems like the team is pretty much in a mess.
Maybe he's a guy you keep around as an assistant again.
Yeah.
You know, because the players seem to do like him, but he's not a good head coach yet.
You're just not right. Just not there yet, right?
I mean, he just retired, like, what, 4 years ago or something?
I know Sean Elliott at South Carolina got the job and was like, this is my time. You know, this is my chance, right?
And
gonna
now
be all gung ho. Now he's like, I'm done.
I'm out of here.
I'm like, leaving.
Instantly.
Because if I get killed by Clemson, I'm going down in history. I better get out of this.
I hate that move by him. I think I said that to you when we were texting back and forth.
What is the water? The water got poison in it or something there that everybody wants to leave?
Like,
I mean, just finish it up and get the hell out of there.
Yeah,
they're paying you decent money to coach that team until the season's over.
I mean,
collect your check and leave.
Don't be a baby and start walking away quitting.
Listen. I have said this so many times, but I keep repeating it to my friends who just still worship the ground Spurrier walks on. And I think, go ahead, continue to do that. But make no mistake, he ran as soon as it got awful. He took off.
Yeah.
And now Elliott's doing the exact same thing.
Nobody wants to coach this
awful football team in the game against Clemson. It's a historic game for the city and the school and the state. It goes down in the history books. Nobody wants to be on the losing end of a rout. Nobody wants that on their resume, even if they leave far, far away from the state. So they just abandon it. Spurrier knew he had a garbage football team, and so does Sean Elliott.
And the bad thing.
By the way, the SEC almost took a bloodbath this weekend.
Yeah, that was
especially in the East. South Carolina lost to the Citadel, and Florida almost lost to Florida Atlantic, a bad Conference USA team.
They really should have because that pass interference should have been called in the end zone. It was blatantly pass interference.
Game. Gosh, I'm not going to be surprised if Florida loses to Florida State. Coming up at the end of the year.
My biggest takeaway was what LSU did again, and is Les Miles gone?
Now, I'll go back to Les Miles for a second, because I talk to LSU people all the time. And Brian Lazier has been on the show a number of times. And I've asked him a couple of times about the Les Miles job security question. And over again, my LSU guys go, LSU, Les Miles ain't going anywhere. Les Miles not going anywhere. This guy wins, you know, 9 to 10 games a year. He puts his team in a fighting chance to win a national championship. They understand how tough it is. He's not going anywhere. I do not buy that for one bit. I don't buy that for one second.
Their biggest rival beat them up, and now all of a sudden you've fallen apart.
They have lost three in a row. There were people at the beginning going, I'm not really sure. I'm still waiting. I'm still wondering. And then they exploded. As soon as they lost to Alabama, they've now lost three straight. They haven't lost three straight since 1999. Don't tell me Les Miles' job is safe. I wouldn't be surprised if some boosters is already trying to collect money now.
The one thing I did see is he's owed $15 million in his buyout.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money to be like, hey, get out of here.
Even those rich oil LSU guys
because you know whoever
still won't want to come up with that kind
of money. Right. You know whoever they go after this It's going to be a big time coach, and they're going to have to pay him.
I wish people would relax. So it's so difficult to coach in this in college, yeah. in the SEC. Mark Richt is the similarities between Mark Richt and like Mike Shanahan are they parallel each other. Mike Shanahan had to be let go of the Denver Broncos back in 2008. He had to. They didn't make the playoffs for 3 years in a row. And there was just a feeling of, we just need some new blood in here. He's been here long enough. He's been here a while. He won two Super Bowls. But the way it was presented was, look, it's we're not angry. We're just looking for new direction. You know, and this guy probably needs to go somewhere else, and we probably need to get somebody else. You can't coach at a place in the NFL forever, so we just need a new voice. I think that's what needs to happen at Georgia. Same kind of thing. Need a new voice. Richt has been there forever. They haven't been able to get over the hump and be competitive for a national championship. It's time to get somebody else. But Les Miles, be really careful, because every year LSU is guaranteed to have a team that is at least competitive. They may not win the division. They may not go to the SEC championship, but they're never going to be, you know, 2-8 in the conference. They are a team that should always be one of the top teams in the SEC. Plus or minus a couple of wins, but always hover around 10. You bring in somebody else, it could fall apart quickly. You really need to make sure you bring in the right guy. Because Texas hasn't been able to turn it around immediately with Charlie Strong, and neither will LSU. You have to be really careful. But I don't buy that for 1 second. I think there are boosters trying to figure out how they can buy him out now.
Yeah.
Deferred payments over 20 years, I don't care. They'll figure it out. But yeah, it's just I wouldn't feel secure if I was Les Miles.
I saw where South Carolina is going to update their stadium. I saw they're going to do a renovation.
They just did.
I saw they're going to try more.
Oh, wow.
I'll see if I can find that story and send it to you.
To do what?
They were going to do a few different things.
They just put in a big, huge jumbotron not too many years ago and expanded the seating.
I'll see if I can find it. I think I might have favored it on Twitter, and I'll see if I'll send it to you. But yeah,
more fans sitting in the stands watching them go 6-6.
Yeah.
Get on your feet and support this PapaJohns.com bowl quest.
Right. The other interesting stories that kind of came out this weekend is Houston and Memphis up in their bids to keep their coaches up above $3 million each.
Yeah. And then how does Tom Herman thank them? By going out and losing to UConn.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
And Memphis lost.
Soon as there's talk about giving him $3 million a year. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Cool now.
Yep. And Memphis
lose
lost
to UConn.
Temple.
I can't. That's the thing about college football that drives me crazy. And this used to happen to Boise State all the time. I used to get really high about Boise State. Like, I just want this team. I rooted for Boise State every year because I wanted voters under the old BCS system. I wanted voters to answer for Boise State. I wanted voters to have to make a decision about Boise State, whether or not they were good enough to be one of the top two teams in the country or not. And I used to say, man, I want this team to win every game. And sure enough, they'd lose on some missed field goal against Nevada or somebody else in the conference, and then they'd go by the wayside. Every year it felt like that. Thought the same thing with Houston. Love Houston. Playing good football. Just get them unbeaten and make the committee have to answer for Houston. Probably wouldn't put him in. I wouldn't put him in. But just put him up there enough that you have to get some sort of answer for them. No, and then they lose to UConn, and all that's out the window. Gone in a blink of an eye. Goodness gracious. All right, 800-777-2907. Your thoughts on the NFL Week 11. We're going to get into Monday Night Football, too, because I love this Rex Ryan New England Patriots thing, but I just don't think the Bills have a chance. We're going to talk more about the Broncos. We're going to talk more about the Dallas Cowboys, and also want to get to some other games, the nooks and crannies of some other ones you may not have been paying attention to. 800-777-2907. It's Tony D here on the Nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to look at the National Football League Week 11. And the Dallas Cowboys, as I mentioned earlier, have gotten Tony Romo back. And now at 3-7. Okay, look. 3-7 is a huge mountain to climb if you want to get into the playoffs. But only if you were in a competitive division. The Eagles and the Redskins were both throttled on Sunday. Both throttled. And are shells of any sort of any sort of team we may thought they were. That's why last week we did not lose our minds over Kirk Cousins' 4 touchdowns against the Saints, because it made no sense to praise somebody for throwing 4 touchdowns against one of the worst defenses in the NFL, all right, that basically got Rob Ryan canned. The Carolina Panthers ran through the Washington Redskins, ran through them. And the Eagles, Jameis Winston threw 5 touchdown passes against them. In fact, Luke Esterling is going to join us at the bottom of this hour to talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are now 5-5, by the way. Now, the giants of the team in the division, that if I'm the Cowboys, that's who I'm chasing. I'm chasing the other two, even though I'm still behind them. If you continue to win games, you're going to pass those other two shells of football teams. Dallas Cowboys at 3-7. If they beat the Carolina Panthers on Thanksgiving, as I mentioned with Frank Schwab, I think it feels like a 2-game jump, even though it's 1. I just think there is a momentum builder that will come from winning Thanksgiving Day against the Carolina Panthers if you can do that. And believe me, I would not count that possibility out. Carolina is playing great. They have a good defense. Cam Newton is playing on another level that we haven't seen from him in a while. But the reality of it is, short weeks in the NFL, we just have no idea how they're done. You know, you try to get into a game plan, you try to get into some sort of rhythm, all of that, it could be thrown out the window. You just don't know how teams prepare in a short week. I think the Cowboys understand this problem, right? They just don't have any room for error here, right? I don't know what's going to win the division, but I'll tell you what's not going to win the division, all right? 6-10 is not going to win the division, all right? Heck, 7-9, I want to believe won't win it, but it might. It could. But if you're Dallas, you just don't have wiggle room. That game on the road against Washington, even though the Redskins are a shell themselves, are always going to give you trouble. So, but with Romo, you could tell that team looked different. You could tell there's a confidence level, that they look different. And let me say this. There's got to be eventually a disassociation with Greg Hardy. There has to be. We were talking about this before the show today. When is Jerry Jones going to just pull and say, no more on Hardy? I'm sticking up for the team. I have got to protect what I have as a team. No one is going to come in here, do what they want, be late for meetings, be a distraction, be disruptive. No matter what they can do on the field, I have got to protect the image of my team. Because if the Dallas Cowboys turn this around and make the playoffs, even at 8-8, if they get in, I tell you right now, I won't bet against them unless it's a monumental challenge. You know, Dave Hellman, we brought him on last week from DallasCowboys.com. The team is not a 2-7 football team. It is not. It does not look like a 2-7 football team. And you just see a different team than you've seen in these 7 losses with Tony Romo at quarterback. But the game against the Panthers could say a lot about where they actually are. It's similar with the Minnesota Vikings, the team we've been talking about earlier tonight. I want very badly for the Minnesota Vikings to have made a statement today that they can play in a game like that against a team like the Green Bay Packers. But they're not quite there yet. Maybe it was too much to ask to make that kind of statement. But the Vikings are a good team on the rise. They're just not Green Bay at their level good. Green Bay, when things aren't really going well and things aren't really clicking, and then, yeah, they could take down the Packers. A focused Packers that are doing the things that make them good, the Vikings aren't on the same level yet. That's the difference between being in a good division and being in a bad division, is that the Cowboys can be 8-8 and have this season of disarray, make the playoffs, and turn a switch. In the division of the NFC North, where you've got these two pretty good teams in the Vikings and the Packers, you have a standard of excellence in the Packers that the Vikings aren't quite able to achieve yet. Not quite there. Maybe get there later, but not quite there. This game, I thought, was going to be highly entertaining, and it turned out not to be. The Sunday night game, I thought, was going to be highly entertaining, and it was. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. And the other game that I... Listen, we were giving out value of whether or not you should watch a game or not. The Detroit-Oakland game got a very, very low value for us. And here are the Lions once again winning a game after a couple of weeks ago, they blew up the front office. And since then, the Lions are 2-0. Go figure. As they went on to beat the Oakland Raiders 18-13. And are the San Diego Chargers telling fans, look, we're moving to LA. You want this season to be forgettable, so just forget it. Because Kansas City rolled through the Chargers 33-3, and the Chargers fall to 2-8, a team that I picked to win the division. And I know they've had injuries and whatnot, but this has been an extremely disappointing season for Mike McCoy, who I'm very high on, and a team that I really liked going into this season, even without Antonio Gates for the first four games of the season. But the Chargers are acting like they can't get out of town fast enough. Or at least want to make it easier for Chargers fans to forget them by giving them a terrible season. Luke Esterling is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There's a lot of good things that are going on with Tampa Bay right now, and one is their quarterback. We spent a lot of time talking about Marcus Mariota and how fun he is to watch as a rookie in this league, and the Jameis Winston Mariota watch and the arguments and the debates or whatnot. Early in the season, it had gone Tennessee's way, that they got the better end of that deal. But Jameis Winston has found a key to not turn the ball over as much as he did earlier this season, and it is paying off. He had 5 touchdown passes today against the Philadelphia Eagles to 5 different receivers. It shows a level of maturity. And the Buccaneers, believe it or not, are at 500, and they are 5-5. Now, Jameis Winston came into this draft so highly rated by scouts who saw him from the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers went to go see his pro days and said, we got a guy. They may have played it close, like close to the vest, just not giving away their cards. But the insiders all said Jameis Winston blew that team away in his workouts. He's showing a level of maturity on the field. How has Lovie Smith been able to put this together? Luke Esterling will join us. He covers them for Bleacher Report, and we'll also get his take on the rookies around the league. From Todd Gurley, Mari Cooper, Marcus Mariota, we'll get his thoughts coming up next. It is Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to look at the Sunday that was in the National Football League. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat the Philadelphia Eagles 45-17. And Jameis Winston threw 5 touchdowns. It's a team we haven't focused on a lot, but now maybe we should be paying attention. That's why we bring in Luke Esterling. He covers the Buccaneers for Bleacher Report. He's also with DraftBreakdown.com. Help us out to look at the rookies in the National Football League as well. And he joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, Luke?
Doing great, Tony. How about yourself?
Good. All right. So in terms of Jameis Winston and the play over the last couple of weeks, what has he been able to do over the last couple of weeks that has led to this kind of success?
You know, I tell you, it really comes down to eliminating mistakes and limiting turnovers. What he did early in the season, you know, you take the rookie lumps and you realize there are going to be turnovers and those sorts of things, but you know, you look at week one, he throws a couple of interceptions, a pick six on his first NFL pass attempt against Tennessee. You know, Mariota throws 4 touchdowns and no interceptions, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, they made the wrong pick, blah, blah, blah. He comes in week two, bounces back, goes on the road against New Orleans, has a fairly mistake-free performance, and they win on the road against New Orleans. So, you know, a couple weeks later, he throws 4 picks against Carolina in week 4, and everybody's like, oh man, here we go again. He didn't turn the ball over after that game for 4 games in a row. He threw a couple picks last week, comes back this week. So no turnovers in 5 out of his last 6 games. So I think that's really what, you know, when you look at the numbers, that's really the one that impresses me the most. And also it's the fact that Doug Martin in that running game in Tampa Bay is really keeping defenses honest and allowing them to, you know, not just sit back and wait for him to make mistakes. So I think a solid running game. The offensive line is overachieving both in the ground game and in pass protection. So they're really, you know, just setting him up for success. And he's playing like a veteran already, 10 starts in.
Is he bringing in the same characteristics or the same personality that he had at Florida State? Because you watched him even in that perfect season and into his final season where he would have some bad moments, but it just never seemed to faze him. Does he have that, or have the coaching staff put him in position to say, hey, when you make these mistakes, we really are going to start to do this to sort of minimize it? Or is it just the way he is as a person?
Oh, it's absolutely the way he is. He's got an extremely short memory. You know, he said on multiple occasions this season that he's just he always believes that he's going to win and that his team's going to win no matter what. You go back to the locker room speech I think he gave against Clemson last year, where he just, you know, it just doesn't matter to him. No matter how bad you're down at halftime or what the situation is, he always believes that his team is going to get out of it and that he's going to lead them there. You know, you saw him do it against Dallas. With the game-winning drive, even after having not a really great game. So it's just something he always believes, and he's always going to be confident in his abilities. Sometimes as a rookie, that can come back to bite you when you make decisions down the field. But when it comes to always believing that you're in the game, it's a quality you want in your quarterback, and that's something he has.
You talked about Jameis Winston, obviously. We talked about Doug Martin. What else is there to like about this Buccaneers team?
You know, it's the fact that they have an offensive line that's really overachieving. I mentioned that earlier, but you've got an offensive line that has two rookie starters that have started since week one, two starters in Joe Hawley at center and Dodger Chairless at right tackle, who really were very late additions, late into training camp because of injuries and really weren't expected to start, who have played pretty, pretty well. And you've got Donovan Smith, who's a left tackle, starting at left tackle from day one and protecting your investment in Jameis Winston, who's really done a pretty good job. Ali Marpet, who's a right guard who hasn't played for the last couple weeks due to injury, but comes in from a Division III school and starts at right guard from day one and really has been probably the best offensive lineman on that unit. So I think that, you know, you like the youth that they have on the team. You like the fact that Mike Evans, despite some drops in the last couple weeks, has made up for the fact that that's been a really banged up unit. They lost Lewis Murphy for the season earlier this year. They haven't had Vincent Jackson until today for the last 4 weeks. Austin Seferian Jenkins has been hurt for most of the year. Until this week, with the Seferian Jenkins still out, Jameis Winston hasn't had his three top targets on paper on the field, but for two quarters this whole season, which was the first half against New Orleans. So you like the fact that even though they've got injuries, they're a young football team that's getting the job done. They started out 1-3. You're thinking, man, 2-14. Now you're 1-3. Lovie Smith, is he going to last? Now he's got this team 5-5, a game out of the wild card. So they're a young team. They're exciting to watch. They're getting it done on both sides of the ball now, and there's a lot to like.
He threw 5 touchdowns to 5 different receivers. Does he have a quote-unquote security blanket on that team in terms of a favorite receiver? Because this is a real sense of maturity to go to 5 different guys and to spread out the targets like he did in this game.
Yeah, I think that's that's a testament to the fact that he's seeing the field and seeing the defense and taking what's being given to him, whether it's Mike Evans because he's the big name, or whether it's Vincent Jackson because he was back, or whether it's Harvard grad Cameron Brait or undrafted rookie free agents in Dante Dye or Adam Humphries. I mean, he's going to find the open man, and he's made that clear, and he did it today by hitting 5 different receivers. Actually almost hit Humphries for a 6th touchdown for a 6th different receiver today. Kind of went through his hands. They had a holding call. It wouldn't have counted anyway, but, you know, he's going to find whoever's open. He's not going to care how much money you're making or when they drafted you. He's just going to get the job done.
Luke Esterling joins us, covers Tampa Bay Buccaneers for Bleacher Report, also at draftbreakdown.com. I know when I talked to you over the summer about this, I find the Tampa Bay fan base fascinating because my wife is from that area. She's a Florida Gator. She's a huge Bucs fan. And in talking to her family, I always get this idea that they live in this like Florida Gator bubble, and then the Bucs come next, and the Jameis Winston pick kind of bothered them because he's a Seminole and they don't like him and whatnot. Has the Florida Gator contingency warmed up to this guy?
Hey, you know, winning cures everything in the NFL, and the fan base is exactly the same thing. I think as long as the Gators are still winning, which they're doing a decent job of right now, and the Bucs continue winning, I don't think they care that Winston's doing the winning for the Bucks. If anything, they're probably glad he's not doing it for the Seminoles anymore at this point. So
right.
I think, you know, again, you take a 2-14 team, you put a Seminole under center, and you get them back to 500 relevancy and playoff talk in late November. I think those orange and blue fans are going to be happy with what's happening in Pewter and Red.
Because I did remind them a number of times that they became big Warwick Dunn fans, and then they kind of had to concede that point to me.
Yeah, you know, you look back over the team's, you know, glory years, and really the best players that have played for this team in their best times have come from the big three schools in Florida. So
yeah.
Whether it's Miami, Florida, Florida State, they have done a great job of keeping that, you know, somewhat local talent and building a quality franchise with it. And it looks like that Winston could lead them back in that direction.
One of the other reasons we'd like to talk to you is to go over a couple of the other rookies and how you're seeing them so far in the NFL. And I want to go with the other quarterback, Marcus Mariota. What do you like about what he's doing in Tennessee?
You know, Mariota's funny because, especially being a Tampa guy and a Bucs guy and going through the draft process, it was such a and it's always like this when you have two quarterback prospects like that. It's always a war. It's always got to be this guy or the other guy. You're a Mariota guy or you're a Winston guy. And I'm like, well, why can't you be both? You know, Winston was number two on my board, and Mariota was number three and a very close second to him in the quarterback rankings. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, there's so many variables with all positions and players, but particularly with the quarterback, you know, your team needs and what you run on offense and what you need personality-wise from your quarterback, that can move one of those guys up or down a notch depending on what you need from him. So, you know, it was really 1A, 1B with those two guys. And when you look at what they're doing on the field, again, for two teams that finished with 2-14 records last season, you have to be happy with what both of them are doing. Obviously, Mariota has struggled a little bit with a knee injury that he sustained, but when he's been healthy, I mean, he's played fantastic. He's the first quarterback in my, if I'm not mistaken, in NFL history to throw for four touchdowns and no interceptions in his first two NFL starts, or in two NFL starts in his rookie season ever. So, you know, he's a guy that, again, we have all these narratives that we think about, oh, Mariota, he's the running quarterback, so he's going to make more plays with his legs. Well, I don't know if he's scored a rushing touchdown this season. Winston has four. You know, so it's just one of those things that things really don't end up on the field as much as people think about and talk about. And I think it speaks to how bored we get in the offseason sometimes. We feel like we have to come up with things to talk about. But I love Mariota. I think he's also going to be a very great player in this league as long as they continue to build that offense around him. Obviously, with Ken Whisenhunt already gone, it is already some shakeup there. So they need to do everything they can to build around him and his skill set because I really think he has what it takes to be a successful quarterback and to lead that team out of the cellar.
Luke, are you a little surprised at the early success of Todd Gurley coming back, coming into the injury, but not only that, but being able to get ready, get into this league, and do the things that he's been doing for St. Louis so quickly?
You know, I really can't. I can't say I'm surprised. Even through his whole injury process and the pre-draft process, I didn't take him out of the top five overall players in this draft for me. I didn't obviously think he would go that high, but when they took him with the 10th pick, a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads, and I think fit-wise, I think I was too. I was surprised that the Rams went with that position, but it just goes to show you that the Rams looked and saw a player that was such a rare overall talent that they're like, you know what, we don't care. We're going to take this guy. We know he's special. So when he hit the field, you know, hit the ground running, literally, you know, and just exploded with the games that he's had, it's really not a surprise if you go back to the film and see the things he was able to do in the SEC against some of the best defenses in the country week in and week out. You know, it just speaks to his physical ability also to be able to bounce back from an injury like that and be so effective at the highest level. You got to hand it to the kid. I mean, he's a hard worker, obviously, to bounce back from that, and I think the future is very, very bright for him.
It's really never too early when we always have some fun to look ahead. Where is your projections going for the 2016 draft?
You know, it's going to be a very interesting class, I think, and like we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years, it's going to be very contingent on the underclassmen that declare. We had a record, I think, a year or two ago with underclassmen. Over 100 underclassmen, you know, basically are declaring for the draft at this point. So it's going to have a heavy impact on that, but it's going to be heavy in the trenches. We got a lot of great offensive linemen, a lot of good offensive tackles, defensive line guys, obviously, like Joey Bosa from Ohio State, Robert Kimdichie from Ole Miss, Andrew Billings from Baylor is a guy to keep an eye on, just a huge, huge guy that can play pretty much anywhere on the defensive line. But, you know, we've seen that trend over the last few years, too, and I think it's going to continue. This draft is going to be very heavy in the trenches. Quarterback position, not so much. The receiver position, maybe not so much. some talented running backs. But again, you're going to wonder if those teams are going to spend premium picks on running backs when you can get production out of guys in the middle round. So I think there's a lot of linebackers out there. Jalen Smith from Notre Dame is one of the most fun players in the country to watch, in my opinion. So definitely some plenty of Sunday talent out there, but I think there's going to be a lot of underclassmen in the first round again this year.
I'm going to ask you a question I've asked a lot of people on this show who follow the NFL and college ball and in the draft. Luke, do you think we're ever going to see a day, and I know we kind of people had kind of touched on it with Leonard Fournette, where an underclassman who is not available to go right away leaves college, chills out, trains for an extra year, and then goes to the draft? Or is that college experience too important for the NFL draft?
Yeah, I'm a never-say-never kind of person. I think that we've seen too many crazy things happen to say that someone will never try it. And if anything, you can frame the facts to fit whatever narrative you want, I think. I think if you want to say, you know, it's smart to sit out a year, you know, look at the injuries that happen to these guys and what it can cost you, you know, you can go that route and think there will be a guy who will say, you know what, it's not worth it, I'm just going to sit out, I'm going to go to one of these performance companies and just work out for the year and stay healthy and try to, you know, work on things and just train to be ready to get drafted. And then you look at guys like Todd Gurley and you see if you think you're such a special player, you're, even if you risk injury and you are injured, you know, if you're that good and you'll be able to bounce back from it, it's not going to matter. And maybe that is important to get that experience. And some people worry that maybe teams will see that as a sign of weakness, that you don't want to go out and compete and you're scared of going out there and putting everything out there and competing against other people and risking that injury, that you'd rather sit back and play it safe. So you can really, you know, see it and argue it either way. But I'm definitely somebody who doesn't say that we'll never see that. It's definitely possible.
Yeah, Luke Easterling again, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Bleacher Report and DraftBreakdown.com. Always good talking with you, my friend. Thank you so much, as always.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me.
You got it. And I'm still fascinated by that. I'm going to ask that to every guy that comes on and talks about the draft. I love it. I get these different variety of opinions because I don't mind a guy doing it, you know, that we'd never heard of. You know, maybe a guy that's not going to be picked high and whatnot. Yeah, maybe that will happen. But the big names, the big guys, the Heisman Trophy candidates, the one sophomore that says, my junior year, I ain't coming back. I'm wondering if that's going to happen sooner than we think. 800-777-2907 is the number. It is Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quick and Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
Did the Cincinnati Bengals erase any of that kind of postseason, or we got to wait and see doubt in Sunday night's game despite losing to the Arizona Cardinals? I think they did. In my opinion, I think they did. There's no such thing as a good loss, and I'm not even going to try to say that, to imply that. But I like the way they played on the road down in that game against Arizona. I like the way they came back. That's what I'm looking for in teams. The Bengals are going to make the playoffs, barring some sort of epic injury or, you know, something that completely destroys the next six games. The Bengals are making the playoffs. But I think this team definitely looks different. I like the way they play. I like this game. This game was really, really fun. First part, not so fun. Like I said, I was at a restaurant tonight, and I could see a couple of bad interceptions and whatnot. I was watching it kind of sort of listening to my kids talk about their weekend and listening to my wife and whatnot, but also keeping kind of an eye across the way in the bar, as I tend to do sometimes. But then when I got home, I was like, this is as good of a game as I'm going to see. This was real. That was a really good showcase of the NFL. A lot of emotion, excitement, good play in the second half. But I know people look at the Cincinnati Bengals and they go, all right, but you know what? Wake me up in January when they're in a playoff game and they win a playoff game. Because if they do that, I'm good. If they're not, but until then, I'm not ready to make a judgment. And I'm thinking you can make a step that says, look, that they're a different football team. That they're a different football team. I don't know how much, but I think they're different. Look at the way the AFC is shaping up anyway. Right? The Patriots are the cream of the crop. The Denver Broncos, maybe with a backup quarterback who may be good, who may not be good, who knows? The AFC South is going to be won by somebody, and we have these feel-good teams right now, like, oh, look, the Houston Texans look like they're putting it together now. DeAndre Hopkins had a couple of touchdown passes. Oh, my God, they even got a good performance from T.J. Yates, who didn't have a job a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Well, still. And the Indianapolis Colts continue to win without Matt Hasselbeck, who beat the Atlanta Falcons. Well, if I'm the Atlanta Falcons, I got to sit down and restart my engines here. Do you remember we actually had an argument or a debate about who was the best team in the NFC South that was unbeaten? Who you believed in more?
Right. Yeah. What, 7-0? They were both 7-0, I think.
Yeah, I think. No, actually 5-0.
What was it, 5?
Maybe 5. Because they are now 6-4. Yeah, 6-4. The Atlanta Falcons look so there. The Atlanta Falcons look good. The Atlanta Falcons. Carolina, I don't know about them. Carolina's 10-0, man. 10-0. I don't know about you, but I'm going to make this statement about the Carolina Panthers is going to get me in some trouble. I feel like if the Carolina Panthers get beat, they get beat really badly. Like the game they lose, it's going to be one of those, ooh, boy, they did not look good at all. Kind of like it just explodes on them. And they bounce back and whatnot, but it's going to be one of those, everything doesn't, Cam Newton throws 3 interceptions, defense can't stop anybody, some team just carves them up. And then everyone will spend a week going, oh man, I knew it. I just had this feeling about this Carolina Panthers team. I don't think they're as good as we thought they were. And then they'll come back next week and they'll play well again.
Tell me who you think does this. This is their schedule.
I don't know.
Remaining.
Go ahead. Tell me.
Dallas, at Dallas, at New Orleans, home against Atlanta, at the Giants, at Atlanta, home against Tampa.
I could see the Giants doing it.
See, I thought the Saints. When I first looked at the schedule, I just thought Saints because they can. They're a team that sometimes shows
throw.
Up and they just throw the ball all yeah. over the place, and it's crazy.
I could say the Saints. The problem is the Saints' defense got to get better because Cam will carve that up. If it doesn't improve immediately after they kicked Rob Ryan to the curb. By the way, speaking of Rob Ryan, did you hear what he said about how he's getting blamed for everything in New Orleans, including Katrina?
I saw
relax,
a little bit
big,
of it.
Relax, big boy. Relax. Calm down. But I tell you right now, those Ryans don't take losing jobs very well, do they?
No, they don't.
They
take it all very personal.
Very personal. I've seen coaches lose jobs that have had nothing but nice things to say about the people that let them go because they know it's a business and they should be fired. If you get into coaching, you're getting canned. That's just the rule of the business. You're getting canned, right? You're either getting cut or you're getting told to get out of here or you're getting canned. And the Ryans just take it so personally. They can't stand it. They can't. Maybe that's part of their charm. I don't know, but they just... Rex could not take losing that Jets job, even though he likes where he's at, even though he landed another job, even though he's in Buffalo now and everything, he could not stand getting let go. He took it personally. Rob Ryan, same thing. Rob Ryan got let go by the Dallas Cowboys and said he'd have a job in 5 minutes. He just could not stand the fact that he got let go. And now he's gotten let go by the Saints and he's making statements that they're blaming him for Katrina. Relax, big boy. Relax. Nobody's blaming you for Katrina. Golly. These people. Unbelievable. What if the Dallas Cowboys do it on Thanksgiving Day? Well, you and Joe will have a lot of fun with that when you fill in on this overnight show that night. The Cowboys can pull that off. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number as we continue to look at Week 11 in the National Football League. It's Tony D on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.